Greetings, Comrade Morin.
Dobry din, tavrish, snell.
I've been watching too much Chernobyl. I think that's the answer.
I haven't watched any of it, but hear people keep talking about
it. It's so good.
It sounds terrifying to me.
It is brilliant because it is laid out like a horror movie or a thriller, but it all really happened and is terrible.
Yeah, it sounds, as someone who, you know, grew up in the, I won't say the shadow of that, because that was kind of a big deal around my formative years. And so, like, you had that, I was at the tail end of the Cold War. And so, like, the idea of, like, nuclear holocaust, nuclear explosion, whatever, was definitely, like, a terrifying thing at that era. So, you know, Chernobyl and, like, Three Mile Island and that kind of stuff was all, like, whispered about in hushed terms, especially because when you're, like, you know, six or seven, you really have no conception of what's going on other than it's, like, terrifying and scary.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a time. That was a weird time. But it's a good show. I recommend it to people. It's on HBO for those who are wondering about that. And it's six episodes, something like that. So the last one is going to drop on Monday, and that's it. I don't know when I'm going to watch that one, though, because I'll be in San Jose for WWDC. So will you, by the way. And you'll
thanks for letting me know.
And you'll be at the keynote.
I will be at the keynote. It's You're invited. My first keynote in a while.
I invite you to the keynote. I don't have that power. Yeah,
you probably shouldn't tell people that.
Yeah. Welcome. Enjoy. Come on in.
It's funny because, you know, I know we talk about inside baseball stuff sometimes, but, like, you know, I went to pretty much every Apple event or keynote from, like, I don't know, mid to late 2007. Like, I think the iPhone one was, like, the last big one that I missed during my tenure at Macworld. And then I went all the way up through my time at Macworld, which included, like, you know, my second to last day at Macworld, which was the event where they rolled out the Apple Watch.
Yep.
And then I went to one or two more. I think I managed to wrangle invitations to one or two more after that, but it kind of died off. And capricious gods have decided I get to go again. So that'll be nice. That'll be a nice little change.
That's good. It's good. Well, they'll let anyone in now. No, it's it'll be good to have you there.
It'll be good to be there.
Yeah.
I have no idea what I will be doing. Probably tweeting. That's my guess.
Probably. Sure. And just drinking it in from the somebody said to me, oh, from front and center, and then nope. From all the way off to
from
the side.
Left. I once was on all the way on the side, but in, like, the second row one year. And I think that was the year you were probably there with me. I think that was the year Tony Bennett gave the musical performance at one of the, I don't remember which event it was.
Yeah.
But I remember being really close to Tony Bennett and being like, wow, this is kind of wild.
Yeah, I can never remember. WWDC, it's always, like, way off to the left. And,
yeah, right.
And I have memories of Macworld Expo keynotes where we actually got special access because it was IDG and that we were usually up in the front.
Kind of, I don't know if any of those I was at Macworld Expo keynotes, but I'm not even sure if we still have. I don't remember where I sat for those.
I don't know.
They all blur together.
Yeah, it's funny. In fact, the only one that I wasn't, only Apple event that I don't think I've been physically present at for a long time was Macworld 2000. But that was because I was basically in our booth where the internet was getting walkie-talkie information about when we could drop our stories. That was a wild time for the internet.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, but that was because they were we had gotten a leak the day before with all the spec sheets. And so we had written all the articles in our hotel rooms. We had written all the articles about everything that Apple was going to announce. But so as not to destroy our relationship with Apple, what we did was basically we pre-wrote it as if we got an embargoed briefing. And then the moment every single product got announced, there was a full-blown story about it on our website, which was pretty cool. But somebody had to push those buttons, and that was me.
I did go to one event I think you didn't go to, which was there was an event at the Guggenheim Museum.
Ah, yes.
In
I didn't
New
go
York,
to, which, I did not go to that first New York event either because it seemed ridiculous.
It was ridiculous. Lex Friedman and I went to that one and covered it, which was kind of a
East
trip.
Coast correspondence.
Yep, that's right. That's right.
That was like, hey, iBooks.
It was a weird event.
Textbooks.
It was very strange. But they still do that every once in a while.
Most analogous was that Chicago event, which was also a little weird, where it was like the cheap new iPad and a bunch of education things. And I got to, you know, go to Chicago for a day. as opposed to that time that I got to go to Brooklyn for a day. And it's funny. It's a funny, funny life. It's a funny, funny,
funny
business that we're in. The time that I flew across the country to do a podcast interview and then flew right home. That happened. It was wacky. Well, I have so much on my calendar for next week. I don't even know. And I at least have the experience to look at some of the things and say, yeah, that's not going to happen. I know you say that we're going to be meeting at 1 o'clock, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I have that with social events too, where it's like there's all these social things going on. I'm like, yeah, I will pretty much accept invitations to many of these social events. And I probably won't go to all of them because there simply is not enough time.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. It's true. And also, honestly, on Monday, for example, like, I don't know. I gotta like write stuff. Right.
Right.
Like,
right.
That's the challenge with this, is that there's a lot of socialization that goes on at WWDC. But the problem is, if you are covering it, you need to work. So like Monday is a great example where there's the keynote, I've got to do the post keynote upgrade. I've got a couple of meetings that I need to go to. And then there's, ATP live. Okay. I'll do all of that. That's it. Like, I'm out of time at that point. So
yeah, it was interesting, you know, I actually haven't been to a keynote in San Jose before. The last couple of years I've watched them with other people, some of the relay crowd and adjacent people. And then what's different for me is that, like, I get to just sort of wander off at that point and be like, oh, I can just sort of sit around for a couple, because everybody else is going off to do other things at that point. And I'm usually unbooked. So I have my like couple hours of like, I can pontificate about these things and write up stuff while there's nobody else really around for me to interact with. You know, some people go off to like all the developers or the keynote, and then they go off to the platform State of the Union and all that jazz. And you know, that's like my time to digest and think about what the implications of everything is.
Right, exactly. It's fortunately all that stuff is all on video now, all the big stuff. So if you don't go to State of the Union, you can just see it. And so it's, you know, either way, but yes, it's there's too much that happens there. It's very busy. But it would be nice to see, Lauren was asking, so who's coming to this thing? And I said, everybody I know,
yeah,
like literally everybody I know, this is where they all come to someplace vaguely near where I live. And there's a week of people hanging out and talking and lots of podcasts and writing and meeting people, and it's just a whole big thing. So but yeah, it's great and it'll be fun, but I do look at some of these days and I just think, I've been through this the last 2 years in San Jose where I get a hotel room, and I look at Monday and I just think, okay, so 6 o'clock ATP live, and then 7 o'clock go back to the hotel room and right until 11 p.m. fun, and then start it all again, because like there's just not enough time in those days. So anyway, I'll see everybody Tuesday. it's kind of bananas. We're gonna try to do download podcast from the Apple Podcast Studio on Thursday morning.
Ooh,
so we'll see. We'll see if that comes off or not. That would be nice if we could do that, but yeah, we'll see. I don't know. And I'm going to do the escape room. There's an escape room at WWDC. I don't know. It's probably sold out by now. I don't know. It's with, along with AltConf. Oh, I got a thing. One of my handbraking codes is done. That's exciting. I'm encoding video for Total Party Kill in the background, everybody.
Yeah.
That's how that works. I got to do it. Got to do two versions. Got to do the YouTube upload version. Got to do the video podcast version for subscribers, members. Yeah. Anyway, Chadwick Severn, who did escape rooms at Ool for a couple of years, and they were really fun Apple-themed escape rooms, is apparently building an escape room in AltConf this year.
Oh, that's cool.
And we, the first year at Ool, my team won. I think it was really like, we finished, and I'm not sure anybody else did.
Wow.
And So he invited us, and I'm not everybody on that team is going to WWDC, but you know, James Thompson is going to be back in Scotland. It's sad. He'll be there in spirit, but
if you need someone to take James's place, I'll say I've done a few escape rooms, and yeah, we've set some records with my team.
I think you'd be a ringer. It's not my team to say, but I will pass that information on. I got roped into it, but it's like, sure, fine. That sounds fun. So it's a real week. I've said it before, but worth repeating that. There is plenty to do in San Jose if you don't get into WWDC, or if the idea of paying a couple $1,000 or $1,500 or whatever for lots of technical sessions doesn't appeal to you. Like, it's the place to go. It's what Macworld Expo used to be. I wrote about this at iMore a while ago. It is the place where everybody in the Apple community gets together in person once a year, and you don't have to go to the sessions. There's AltConf, there's Layers, so there's other like conference things if you want to do that, or you can just kind of like hang around, because literally if you are somebody who consumes Apple related media, and you are because you're listening to this podcast, you will see or hear the voices of so many familiar people if you just hang around. People who wrote your favorite apps, people who write and do podcasts and stuff that you listen to and read. It's just, it's wacky just how concentrated it is. Unlike San Francisco, where there's a whole incredibly busy city, and then there are also some Apple nerds there. In San Jose, it's not an incredibly busy city, and that downtown core basically gets taken over by us. And everybody walking around there is an Apple person, and it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's a little weird for me, because the last time I was in San Jose was actually last August for WorldCon,
right?
Which is slightly different crowd,
yeah,
slightly different feel to it,
it's a
but
lot
also
quieter.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's still a big conference. There was still a lot going on there, but yeah, it was a different scene. Slightly different scene.
Yeah, the coffee shop went out of business.
I know. I'm really upset about this. I actually have no idea where I'm going. Like, that was, I spent a lot of time there doing work and eating and stuff like that, and it was good. I liked it, but I guess I'll find someplace else.
Yeah. Well, my question is there something else in that space?
I found an article from a local paper at one point when they went out of business, and it's saying like that space is like, I don't want to say cursed, but they kind of implied like, yeah, there's been a lot of stuff that's gone in and out of there. Because I guess that shop had not been there that long when we first had WWDC there. So it's not like it was like a 20-year institution. It had been there for a couple of years. So maybe, but it may not be a coffee shop.
Yeah, maybe not. It's a, there is another, this is a WWDC facts now. We're just sharing, but there is that other cafe, that like crowded two-level cafe that's okay, that we did our secret podcast in front of that last year, I think.
We did. That's right.
With the buses going by.
Now the buses go by my apartment here too, so it's not really that different.
Oh yeah. Well, there you go. Anyway, I don't know about social policy and if that's gonna, what's gonna happen there. That's it's kind of sad, but what can you do? I'm looking to see if I can find out what might be there now, but I have no idea. It doesn't really say.
Be a good week for somebody to have like a pop-up shop.
Right?
Pop-up coffee shop.
Yeah.
Take advantage of the crowds coming in.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, this can't be right. Is this right? Is it a barbershop now? That would be bad.
Where's my coffee?
Yeah, that's right. Barber, bring me my coffee.
Oh, I need a shave.
I'm concerned that that's what it is now, is that it's a...
Maybe.
It's a barber. Could it really be? Wow. That's not good.
Seems like a weird space for... But anyway, I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
I guess so. Yeah, that's super weird. Anyway, San Jose, you're gonna be here. You flying out tomorrow?
Yeah. Yeah, I should pack.
Yeah, oh boy. Yeah, I got to do that too, for sure. Well, anticipation in the wind, I guess that's what this week, in terms of what we did, the Six Colors magazine came out. There's some stories in there about anticipatory things for this show. And then you and I both wrote little wishy list pieces for for Macworld this week as well. I don't know. I mean, feels like it's going to be big, and the problem with that is that then you get to wish casting, and then all your dreams are crushed, and then you end up coming out of it thinking, well, yeah, it's great,
Maybe it wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, some of this stuff, I think this is the point I was trying to get at with the piece I wrote, was stuff like Marzipan, which we've been talking about for, you know, a year now. It's not necessarily like the flashiest or most impressive demo in some ways. Because like, oh, this app that you can run this app. And it's like, yeah, I can already run that app. It's just on a different device, right? Like, it doesn't feel inherently as like sexy, quote unquote, as some of the more flashy features that sometimes get announced to these things. But you can't argue that it's not incredibly significant to the future of the platforms, and possibly the most significant announcement to the future of those platforms that Apple has made in a decade or more. So I think that's interesting, but it's not necessarily going to be a thing that end users immediately like grok the significance of or see as like a super impressive feature, right? Like, there's lots of other stuff that Apple tends to announce that's much more consumer or user facing that will feel like it's a bigger deal. But I think that's one of the things that there's a reason we've been talking about it for a year. It's because it's that important.
Yeah, it's super important. This is it will have, I think one of the interesting ways that they were, Barco and John were jousting about this on ATP this week. It is, I think it's interesting because it is like the Marzipan thing is a direct impact on developers and users in a way that is rare for WWDC stuff. A lot of it, you know, when we write about new OS stuff, it's sort of like, well, here's the developer story and here's how it sort of like trickles out to you. But this feels to me more like very clearly like, it's big for everybody, right? Like, the developers have this whole thing that's going to happen, and you're going to have this whole thing that happens and in September. And, you know, it's a global change in a way a platform transition of any kind usually is. It's not just about the developers. It's also about the user effect. But that it does, you know, it does add a little spice to it when it's not just sort of a clinical, well, this will be interesting, an interesting problem for your developers of your favorite apps to solve. And instead it's more like, oh yeah, everything is going to change on your computer. That's right. Like, yeah.
And it's still, you know, we saw the proofs of concept last year from Apple. This year, you know, we're hopefully going to see that trickle over to developers, third-party developers. But there may also be further implications of that further down the line that we are going to get hints of here, or maybe start seeing like more tea leaves that point towards a certain thing, but that won't necessarily come to fruition for another year. So that's the other interesting part of it is like, you know, when this code is out in the wild and people start digging through it further, they're going to learn some stuff or potentially find some clues to things that are point to the forward direction here. And that's, there's a long tail to this effect, I think. And, you know, we're just on the, you know, if you're at that part of the roller coaster, like right at the beginning, you know, the first hill is always the highest, right? Because you got to build up all the momentum.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we're just about to crest that first hill.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's, right. Last year was boarding the roller coaster.
Yeah.
Tick, 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 tick,
everybody
tick, 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 tick,
yep.
Tick, 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 tick. Yeah. I can't wait to see all of the, just bananas things that Steve Trenton-Smith finds when he goes spelunking in the actual beta code, because that is going to be, because that's one of the great things is that he's devoted himself over the last year to sort of taking apart how Marzipan works on Mojave. Mm-hmm. So having a beta version to see what's different and all the things they've added, and I'm sure Apple will go into some detail about that at the keynote and the State of the Union, that second session, but I'm sure there will be way more there that will even be covered in detail in some of the individual conference sessions. Although, boy, if there was a time for developers to study all the conference sessions, either remotely or in person, this is the year for it, because I think that there's going to be just an enormous amount of interest. Because think about it, iOS developers are all Mac users. You have to use a Mac with Xcode in order to develop on iOS, which means not only is the Mac being opened up to iOS developers, that there is a market, which I think for people who are struggling to make money on their apps, especially people with more pro inclined apps or utility inclined apps, things that they, because, and I'll just back up for a second for the people who don't understand why this is as big a deal as it is. The method by which you write a Mac app is totally different from the method that by which you write an iOS app. And I was thinking about this the other day while I was like loading the dishwasher or something. I was thinking about how ridiculous it is that Apple has been maintaining two completely different ways of writing apps for a decade. And I know why. Because iOS was a moving target and it was growing fast and they had to come up with a way to build apps on it. And they came up with this new thing, but it was totally not compatible with the Mac and it wasn't meant to be compatible with the Mac. Fine. But after a while, I've really come around to the idea like why is it that you have this totally separate platform? I know why, but like it doesn't, you would never choose to do it that way. And Marzipan is the basically says, hey, do you know how to write an app for iOS? Now you know how to write an app for the Mac, you know, or right. Learn these five right. things and you'll know how. And that is a big deal because not only are they opening new markets for iOS apps, and I think for like pro focused apps where it's sort of like you look at the pro iPad market and you're like, it's okay. But now you're like, oh, I can get the iPad market and the Mac market all in one go with this app. Like, that's so huge. But on top of that, I think don't discount the fact that every single one of these people who's an iOS developer, most of whom don't know how to develop Mac apps, are Mac users, which means that for the first time, for a lot of them, they can write software that they can use while they're developing their apps. And I think psychologically, that's a big thing, to crack open the device that they use as a developer and have their apps be able to deploy there and run natively, I think is a big thing too. So it's a huge potential shift in terms of that, and you know, we will see the results in the Mac App Store this fall. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I agree. So aside from software, there is sort of the big open question is whether or not there is any hardware to be even shown, much less made available starting at WWDC. And I think kind of everybody's attention is on the Mac Pro because so April 2017 was the point where Apple had its little roundtable
right.
and talked about, you know,
we're sorry.
And obviously the last time we saw the I'm gonna say current in quotes generation of the Mac Pro introduced, it was introduced at WWDC. Do you ever wonder if Phil Schiller wishes he could take back that whole like can't innovate my ass thing?
I'm sure they wish they could take back the entire thing, including the product announcement.
Yep.
Right.
Because
and had just kept on making a Mac Pro in the old enclosure and just updating it, and they had never done that thing. And I'm going to go a step further. So you know, before we move on, because I know you're kind of segueing into what about other hardware, but the Mac Pro hardware, like 2 years ago, they showed off the iMac Pro and said it'll ship later, and you can see one, but don't touch it, right?
Right.
I got to think that that's just what they're going to do again. They're going to do something like that, where they're going to do one more thing. New Mac Pro, it really does exist. Here's what it looks like. You can see it, but don't touch it. And it'll ship on, you know, Happy New Year, on New Year's Eve, or whatever, you know, or sooner, whatever. But, you know, but that it's here. And I want to make a prediction. This is an original Six Color Secret podcast prediction I have not previously made anywhere except in my kitchen. So if you were in my kitchen while I was loading the dishwasher, maybe you heard this, but otherwise you didn't. And also you would have to read my mind because I didn't say it out loud. I was listening to ADP and they're talking about the Mac Pro and about all these kind of wild ideas about the Mac Pro. And I'm just going to predict it now. The new Mac Pro is going to be a smaller cheese grater. That's what it's going to be. It's going to look, it's going to look like the old... I would say, or you could say maybe it's an aluminum thing that owes a little bit more to the blue and white G3/G4, something that's got kind of like rounded corners, but maybe handles. I mean, that was actually a pretty clever way to get kind of a curved body, but also have kind of the handles makes it a little more rackable. But I feel like that design was actually a really good design and is still really in keeping with what a big pro tower needs to be like. And I just feel like if it doesn't look just like it, because it probably won't, I think it will look really reminiscent of the, you know, the G5, for lack of a better way, the G5 design, right. which then they carried over into that first Mac Pro generation before they moved to the trash can. And I think about what they could do, and I just think, you guys, you basically, if I was a designer at Apple, I'd be like, why did we get rid of this design? It's amazing. It's got, you know, we did like 3-4 successive versions. We got rid of the plastic and went to aluminum. It does everything we need to do. Let's do a modern take on the cheese grater, which, you know, the cheese grater design is old. It's from like 2005, I want to say.
It's, yeah, it's pretty old.
2003 maybe.
Is it really that?
Yeah, it is. It is. I actually,
the blue and white's 97/98 maybe, or 98/99. I had one in
2003. Yeah, wow. So it's summer of 2003 the G5 came out. And
I'm looking at my blue and white right now.
So it is a very modern Apple design, very much so. I think to this day you look at it and you don't say, "Oh, that's not Apple. That's not today's Apple."
Sure.
I look at it and I say, no, that's actually pretty much in line with where they went with all their other products too. It's a big, shiny, silver, whatever. So, okay, they'll make it space gray.
It's going to be space black, spice gray, whatever, because it's going to match that new Mini and the iMac Pro.
Yeah.
I think that's, my money's on that.
Imagine maybe a little bit smaller and maybe a little bit curvier space gray cheese grater. I think that's what it's going to be.
I think that's a solid guess. I would imagine something.
Keep it simple.
I think it's going to be smaller. I agree with you. I think it's going to be a lot smaller than the cheese grater. But I'm curious to see what tax they take, right? Because they don't need
removable storage on the inside. I think they don't need room for big hard drive bays and big optical drives and all that, so they could slim it down somewhat and say, you know, although that's a question, like, do they want to put some space in there for internal storage?
What I was wondering is, like, do you do that, or do you have little slots for the kind of those same kind of flash drives they use in the Air that they used in the last Mac Pro, which you can still buy and like slot in. You just, as long as they make it available.
Yeah, and I think
it's not hard to make that upgradable.
And they'll know what their customers really want. I mean, they have that whole pro group that does that now.
Right,
is talk to customers.
Right.
I think there's a question of like internal.
Yeah,
do you
yeah.
want internal storage beyond a certain point in a system like this? Or are you always going to have a big disk that you hang off of, on a network, or that's a RAID or something like that? But either way, the amount of space that's in the classic Mac Pro G5 enclosure
you just don't need it.
You don't need that much space. No.
Well, so much. I mean, you remember it was the G5, right, that had the liquid cooling system?
One of the G5s. Yeah.
One of the ones. Yeah, because they couldn't get it to run cooler, which is not as much of an issue now. I mean, at least the stuff they're using is not as volatile, I guess is the word.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can get away with something a little bit smaller. So I'm thinking somewhere between like a blown up Mac Mini and a shrunk down cheese grater. But I agree.
Right. And it might not have
the direction we're headed.
It might not have like the perforations in the front or something like that. But I just feel like that silhouette is more or less what they need to do. Something that's got the, you know, ideally, I think even bring back the handles, because the handles allow you to add a kind of flair to it that it doesn't have if it's just an upright box.
I just want it to have my favorite thing, as I said, I'm looking at my blue and my G3 over there, which I've been unable to part with. My favorite thing was the swing down door on that thing, which was such an amazing design decision, because at that point when I got that, I was working doing IT stuff, and a lot of it was involved opening up computers and, you know, putting stuff in, taking drives in and out, or, you know, replacing RAM or all that stuff. And it was always such a pain, and my hands were always like cut up from dealing with like the metal structure inside, and you have to wedge your fingers in places and stuff like that. And the idea that the door slid down, the motherboard was mounted there, and you could just pop things on and off, I'm like, this is incredible, right? Like, we don't need to do that quite as much now as we used to, but that sort of accessibility pointed towards a deliberate decision on their part. And I think that's something, that modularness that they've talked about a lot is something that pros are really looking for, this idea that I'm going to invest in a computer and this computer is going to last me a while because I'll be able to take things out and put things in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the one I've sat here with my dead Mac Mini, as everybody's heard me tell my stories about, thinking, well, I'm not buying new hardware 2 days before WWDC,
right,
'cause that would be stupid. I don't think I need a Mac Pro necessarily, but there is an appeal to a computer that has that kind of modularity to it, because that's what I've been trying to do with the Mac Mini, but it's a real struggle. And even then, it's a Mac Mini that's 7 years old, because the new ones don't even let you do most of this stuff.
Yeah. I love my new Mac Mini. I'm very happy.
I keep getting tempted by the 2018 model. My biggest issue is lack of internal storage, but I also saw a used version of my 2012 model at OWC or something. They're selling refurbed versions for like $400 or $500. I was like, I could just swap the components, right? And I know. And then I thought, WWC is coming. I have to at least wait to see what the story is before I decide where I'm going.
Sure. Well, anyway, that's not a scored thing, because I'm not in any competition for that. I did, on the upgrade draft, pick both the Mac Pro and a Pro monitor appearance, because I feel like it's time. I'm going to go.
Yep,
Mike was like, I don't know about that. I'm like, I don't see, how could they not?
When else are they going to do it? I mean, they've been waiting 2 years.
Not
they
at
said
the iPhone event.
right, exactly. And they said very clearly, you know, I mean, in 2017 when they talked about this, and 2018 when they sort of talked about it again, like, it was always clear it was never going to be really either of those years. And this year, we haven't heard anything about it.
No, yeah, and they said it would be this year, right? They said, they said that it would be 2019, so here we are.
I couldn't remember if it was that year. I remember them saying definitely not 2017, and there was some question.
In 2018, they said it'll be next year.
Okay, yeah, if they said it's a 2019 product, assuming they're on target, and really, I think the other important part of this is that the 2 years that they've spent on this definitely gives them the, I'm looking for a phrase, kind of like plausible deniability, but not quite, but like, it has that plausibility to it of them being able to say, look, we have spent, you know, more than 2 years thinking about and designing this. Like, it provides a sort of cover, I think, which is good for them telling the story of, like, we really spent a lot of time working on this. And that's, you know, we were committed to doing things right and delivering the model that everybody wanted.
Exactly.
And we did all the research, we talked to all the people, etc. So I think at that point, you know, that's good news. But it's really going to depend on when people get their hands on that thing, whether or not it meets all those needs that people did not feel was met by the trash can model.
Yeah, the ATP conversation about that, there was this whole sort of like, well, what's Apple going to say about it? And what, you know, do they want to do it? John was like, do they want to do it? Because then people are going to complain about this and about that. And I think that was it. And my thought was, well, no. And somebody on the show said it. Well, no, everything Apple does is the best thing ever, right? That's their whole attitude. So, of course, they're going to come out and they're going to say, oh, we listened to you and this is the promise we made 2 years ago and here it is and isn't it great? And but they'll also do it in a way that's probably fairly information light, unless they're really going to start shipping them, which I doubt. I feel like that this is how you keep it under your hat, is you don't, it's not close to shipping, so it can't leak.
Prototypes, but no real final products.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. The rotating iPhone in the glass columns and all those. I agree with you. I think that it would be quite surprising if they said it was going to ship, and I think there's a possibility it ships before, you know, December, but I agree that that seems much more likely to follow that sort of iMac Pro model of, like, here it is. It's going to be available later in the year. We'll get around to it.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is, I think, going to make a lot of people... There's a lot of discussion about Apple's, you know, relationship with the Mac. Some of it warranted and some of it unwarranted, I think. A lot of it unwarranted in terms of, based on what they've been doing for the last couple of years. And I think this is kind of the thing everybody's waiting to see in terms of what does Apple feel the Mac's future is.
Right. I mean, all we have right now is the characterization of, you know, it's that Craig Federighi, like, no, of course not. We're not going to merge Mac OS and iOS.
Right.
but right.
Yeah.
And that, and it's like, okay, well, you made a promise last year. And that's the truth of it, is that rarely does Apple do something like that, where they say, here's where we're going, we'll check back with you in a year. Well, they're going to check back in with us. And what are they going to say? Are they going to say more? Are they going to... I mean, one scenario is this year they say that they're going to make an ARM transition. But yeah, it's not yet. But they're going to do it and just lay that one out on the table for next year. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, could be.
Hmm.
I don't either. A lot of stuff in the air.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm excited. I mean, I feel like it's going to be a good show.
Yeah. No, it's, I think so. I think it's something that people are going to care about and that directly impacts people's lives.
We could be totally wrong about this.
It could be. I love that. I love it when we see like how everybody who's talking and thinking about this stuff gets in a frenzy and gets focused on these very specific things. And then Apple comes out and goes, no, that's not it. It's this. And then everybody else is like, oh, I'm so surprised or whatever. It's hilarious.
Well, and it's funny too, because a lot of those times I feel like we sit there and, you know, you're in that reality distortion field and they're talking about these things. You're like, oh, this is amazing, amazing. You get out of it and you look back and you think, actually, this should have been obvious just based on all the things they have done before. Of course, this is what they were going to do, but we get caught up. In our imaginations,
yes,
that we project,
and we don't have all the information, right? We're just trying to figure it out.
I mean, yeah,
maybe you do. I don't.
I do. I don't want to say. I like the suspense.
All right, that's fair. Don't give it up. I was doing a lot of driving this week, and that was a thing that I thought was hilarious. In Connected this week, Federico says, "I'm not picking the things I know will happen because that's not fair." And I got to be honest, that didn't happen this time, but it has happened in previous drafts that Mike and I have gotten some tip about what's coming. And I have said to him, we just need to not talk about this and not pick it because we know it's going to happen. And that gives away that we know it's going to happen. So let's just not pick it. It does happen. So I appreciate Federico's restraint and yet lack of restraint in saying that he does know things that are going to happen, but then his restraint in not actually choosing them. That's nice. That's great. So, but
it's,
I think
good
it's going
to be circumspect.
I think it's going to be anyway. I think there's going to be a lot of Mac stuff. So people who love Mac stuff, I mean, then they may hate it, but it'll be Mac stuff, regardless of whether people love it or hate it. It will be Mac stuff because I think that's the truth of it. Is the Mac is about to change pretty dramatically in a lot of ways, and I've definitely seen some comments from people who are like, you know, I like the Mac the way it is now. I don't want it to ever change. And for them, I say, invest in current hardware and stay on Mojave, I guess, because it's about to change. And you know what? It's changed and changed. It's a little like, total tangent here, but there was this Washington Post, I think, story about San Francisco, and it was, you know, from somebody who parachuted in and wrote this story about how San Francisco has changed, and now it's this boom of tech has totally changed it, and now only the rich people live here and all that. And I read it, and I thought, this same article could have been written in 1997, right, when the dot-com boom was happening. And, you know, and then before that, and before that, and before that, literally all the way back to the gold rush. And then Peter Hartlaub in the San Francisco Chronicle actually wrote that story this week about how this is what San Francisco is, and it always goes through these cycles. And that's just the nature of it. And I think the lack of historical context and seeing one thing and saying, oh, this one is, oh, it's never happened, what a crazy thing this is funny. And I apply it to the Mac stuff too, where people are like, I don't want it to change. It's like, yeah, I don't know if this change will be good or bad or not, but the Mac has changed so many times since I have been using the Mac. So many
times.
It's
a combination of the whole, you know, A, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And B, you know, the whole boiling the frog idea. Like,
if I had a dollar,
you have gone through so many small changes that you just adapted to. And if you took your,
right,
you know, Mac today and looked at your Mac from 5 or 10 years ago, you'd be like, oh, actually, a lot of things have changed.
Well, and the bigger changes are easier to quantify and to be afraid of. But like, if I had a dollar for every person who wrote in to whatever magazine I was working at the time to say, it must have been Macworld, to say, this Mac OS 10 thing is terrible, I'm never going to use it. Why would I leave my home on the Mac if I'm going to make a platform change, I might as well just go use Windows. There were so many people who said that. And it taught me an important lesson, which is people like to threaten to go to Windows a lot. Most of them never go.
I like it because it's a threat that really only hurts yourself.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it is. It is. One more step and I cut myself.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to stab myself in the foot.
Well, I mean, you need to be restrained and not allowed to harm yourself. But yeah, it is, you know, and people react. It's funny. People react funny to change like that. But the fact is the Mac persevered and OS X got better. And I made this point somewhere, maybe it was on a podcast, but I'll reiterate it here, which is the great thing about using your computer is that they aren't going to make you. Nobody's sending a person to your house to take your computer away. So what happened in the OS X transition is people who could not do their jobs on OS X didn't upgrade. I know
right.
It seems wild for a computer enthusiast to not upgrade and to sit out an upgrade cycle for a while. But there were a couple years there where OS X and OS 9 were moving together. OS 9 was like the final release. But there was like that Steve Jobs funeral for OS 9. Like people kept using OS 9 for a long time because they couldn't go to OS 10. And that was fine. Right. You can get off the carousel whenever you need to and sit it out. And it doesn't mean I am going to leave in a huff and go to some other platform. Like you can wait it out.
The people who ran Mountain Lion for a long time Snow Leopard.
Snow Leopard
because it was Lion, the last. Yeah. Because
Lion broke so many things.
Yeah.
We had the Snow Leopard iMac. I don't know if the iMac in the podcast studio at Macworld is still running. If it is even still there, is still running Snow Leopard. But for a very long time, we had an iMac running Snow Leopard to do all our recording because we couldn't. All the software we used to do it broke.
Yeah, and I think that another point I was making in my column this week is, it's truly astounding when you think about it. If you look at the Mac, and you look at its history. Apple is probably the most experienced technology company when it comes to transitions.
Yes.
Of any technology company.
Seamless transitions.
And that's the point. It's like, and it hasn't always been 100% seamless, but it's been better and better each time. Every time they transition, they have learned a lot from all the things they have done before to the point where, I mean, the PowerPC Intel transition, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Was like... I mean, you know, for developers, there were probably some pain points, but it was mostly unnoticed. Like you bought, you kind of walked in and walked out and it was fine. So that's the thing that I'm interested to see.
Much better than the PowerPC from 68K transition,
yeah,
by the
way,
which was much harder to do.
Yeah.
And OS 9 to OS 10.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Look at all these examples of places where it has... You know, it's the ship of Theseus that we talk about all the time, where it's like, yeah, just pieces get replaced. Are you even using the Mac? Like people talk about, like, oh, a Mac, it's, you know, 1984. It was amazing. It's still amazing today. It's like, you're not using the same computer you were using in 1984. I mean, yes, certain parts of it are recognizably the same, but there is pretty much nothing else in there that's like, it's not like it's the exact same stuff that's been used for 40 years. So I always, it's funny how people idealize things in that way. But yeah, I think that the impressive history of transitions for Apple on the Mac specifically gives me a lot of confidence in, if they make another processor change or the stuff they were doing with Marzipan, that it will be very, very smooth, I think, for most people.
Yeah. Let's hope. Let's hope so.
Indeed.
All right. I think we're done. I'll see you in 2 days.
That's right. And we'll be off and running.
We will. And we'll do a secret podcast from somewhere. Somehow.
Somewhere.
I don't know where. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.